top stories, Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the regional countries can't provide security in the region, urging him to prevent foreign interference. A massive document leak exposes hidden offshore assets worth millions of dollars, allegedly tied to over a dozen heads of state. And Seoul says North Korea has restored its cross-border communications with the South, with officials exchanging their first phone call since August. Those were the top stories. Welcome. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the presence of foreign forces in the region is a source of discord and damage. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has called on regional countries to provide their own security and prevent foreign interference in this regard. The leader made the comments in a ceremony held for graduates of military academies in Tehran. More in this report.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has warned countries against the consequences of relying on foreign powers to guarantee their security. The leader was addressing a virtual ceremony held for graduates of military academies in the capital, Tehran. Ayatollah Khamenei added that the presence of foreign forces in the region is a source of discord and damage. He said the armed forces of the regional countries can ensure the security of the region, and that they should prevent foreign interference in this regard. The leader also spoke about the US military presence in Afghanistan and its chaotic withdrawal from the country. A row between France and the US over a security pact in the Asia-Pacific was also among issues mentioned by Ayatollah Khamenei. Last month, the US and UK announced a deal to provide Australia with technology and means to build nuclear-powered submarines. As a result of the trilateral cooperation, a similar Franco-Australian deal worth $40 billion was scrapped. French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian reacted with fury, calling the agreement a stab in the back. President Emmanuel Macron also urged Europeans to come out of what he called their naivety on the world stage and assert their independence from the United States. Iran's leader said such a spat shows that even European countries, which are not opposed to Washington, feel that there's a deficiency in achieving lasting security because of reliance on the US. America's allies are already looking on with concern at Washington's approach toward France and Afghanistan. The approach is seen as a warning to US allies in East Asia and West Asia and raises the need for them to have plans to cut dependence on the US and explore ways to ensure their own security.
Iran has started inoculating its teenage population in a bid to reopen in-person school education. Iran's health minister made the announcement in a ceremony in Tehran that saw his grandson receiving the COVID jab. Yusuf Jaloli has more.
The 12-year-old boy is the grandson of Iran's health minister, Bahram Einollahi. Mohammad Sadra received the Sinopharm shot with the presence of the health minister and local media outlets to encourage Iranian families to vaccinate their children with peace of mind.
I urge all families who have children between the ages of 12 and 18 to send their kids for vaccination. This way we can reopen in-person school classes safely in the upcoming months. I brought my grandson today to get the vaccine to prove that vaccines will bear no harm for children.
Iran has so far administered more than 58 doses of COVID vaccines. This means 68% of Iran's population has received at least one shot. This number was less than 10% around 2 months ago, when President Ebrahim Raisi took over power from his predecessor. Iran managed to accelerate the inoculation campaign by speeding up imports of foreign-made jabs, as well as supporting local vaccine developers.
Only in Tehran, more than 10 million people have been fully vaccinated. This is over 70% of the capital's population. The vaccination of lower ages will definitely help us get our kids back to school safely.
Based on the international health guidelines, minus 18 age groups should receive a single dose of COVID vaccine. The Iranian health minister said the country has taken the same approach and will administer one shot to its adolescents. He said once this phase is over, the health ministry will start vaccinating students between 7 and 12 years old.
While Iran lagged behind in the national inoculation program, it has managed to be among the first to inoculate its teenage population. If all goes as planned, children can go back to schools in less than 2 months. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A massive document leak has exposed hidden offshore assets worth millions of dollars, allegedly tied to over a dozen heads of state. The so-called Pandora Papers investigation, spearheaded by some 600 journalists, is based on nearly 12 million documents leaked from 14 financial services companies. The documents highlight Jordanian King Abdullah II's alleged property empire and corruption of Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev and his inner circle. The papers have also implicated the Czech Prime Minister, Kenyan President, Pakistan's cabinet members, Ukrainian President and former British Prime Minister Tony Blair, among other high-profile figures. Documents were reviewed by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. Economic analyst David Barkin says the elites in almost all countries tried their best, actually, to evade tax.
I would argue, and I would urge your audience to think about the fact that although the names that you have mentioned are very, very high-profile people, the scope and the depth of these revelations suggest that in almost all of our countries around the world, it's really tragic. In almost all of our countries around the world, the rich people, the elites, are going out of their way to not pay taxes, to not contribute to the development, to a balanced provision of public services and economic development for their countries. In the United States, you have a very, very small group of very corrupt legislatures, two senators, and a number of representatives in the United States Congress, who are on the basis of very, very substantial contributions from international corporations, preventing the enactment of legislation that would provide for the public services that are so necessary.
North and South Korea have restored their cross-border communications, with officials exchanging their first phone call since August. News was announced by Seoul, which described the move as grounds for improving inter-Korean relations. In a statement on Monday, South Korea said it hopes to resume dialogue with the North to establish a rapprochement between the two countries. Earlier in the day, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un had expressed his intention of restoring the cut-off North Korean or North-South hotlines in a bid to establish lasting peace on the Korean Peninsula. The two Koreas had signaled a surprise thaw in relations in late July by announcing the restoration of cross-border communications, severed more than a year earlier. But the détente was short-lived as the North stopped answering calls just 2 weeks later, taking issue with joint U.S.-South Korean military drills. Catalan protesters have marched through central Barcelona to mark the fourth anniversary of a referendum on independence from Spain. Around 1,000 demonstrators took part in the rally. They renewed demands for independence from Spain and asked political leaders to join them. Catalan said yes to separation from Madrid in a referendum held on October 3, 2017. The Catalan parliament approved the vote, but it was declared unconstitutional by the federal government. Since then, tensions have remained high between Madrid and Barcelona. Last month, the two sides began talks to ease the tensions, but they say they remain far apart. Thousands have gathered in the British capital to mark Arba'een and pay homage to Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet of Islam. Millions across the globe commemorate his martyrdom each year and remember his message. Our correspondent, Bianca Rahimi, was at the event and filed a report.
Tears were shed and prayers held in London's Marble Arch, bringing the sights and sounds of Karbala to thousands that gathered there from all over the UK. People from different backgrounds, but all with one thing in common, their love for the Prophet's grandson, who was martyred on the sands of Karbala in the year 680.
This is an extension of the world's largest peaceful procession. And despite the COVID-19 pandemic, millions of people have taken part this year to commemorate Imam Hussein and his family's sacrifice and evoke their message.
Imam Hussein and his family symbolize so many things for those that hold him in their hearts, hope for the oppressed being one of them.
This is the message of Karbala. He did it so that oppression and oppressors could be brought to light. And, people who are innocent, they have hope. So it's a message of hope as well, that you're not alone in this world. There are great personalities, there are people in the world who are ready to fight for you, to die for you.
What Imam Hussein's family went through after his martyrdom is also a focal point of Arbaeen, and the role the women played in the struggle.
We don't need to kind of look to secular role models or take on wholesale this kind of Marxist feminism. We already have women within the family of the Holy Prophet, who had great strength and great dignity. And the important thing is knowledge. This is what we should be as women. We should be people of knowledge. That's the priority.
Every year, this procession highlights events that took place centuries ago, reminding humanity of the ongoing battle against tyranny that we all face today. Bianca Rahimi, London.
A new poll in the U.S. shows that most Americans support the idea of splitting the country along political lines. Well, that displays the deep divide in America and breaks up the notion of functioning democracy. The poll has been conducted by the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. Take a look.
The January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol during the Congress meeting to certify Joe Biden's presidential election victory revealed the deep division within the American society and political system. Now, months after the incident, a new poll has showcased the extreme divisions between the two major U.S. political parties that are Democrats and Republicans. To find out how deep the divisions run, the University of Virginia Center for Politics and Project Home Fire surveyed 2012 voters during the summer. Half of the participants had voted for Donald Trump and the other half for President Joe Biden. Not surprisingly, the results showed a country at ideological war with itself. The responses supporting the idea of forming two new countries out of red and blue states range from at least somewhat agree to strongly agree. Indeed, 52% of Trump voters and 41% of Biden voters expressed support for cleaving the country along political lines. The poll also found that 80% or more of both Biden and Trump voters fear the effects of the other party's policies. As a matter of fact, they said the opposing side presents a clear and present danger to American democracy. In addition, roughly 2 in 10 Trump and Biden voters strongly agreed with the idea of a president bypassing Congress or courts to take needed actions.
The real issue here is the weakening of democracy in the first place, which helps support or enable these notions of secession or mutual hatred.
Furthermore, a June poll found voters saw political division as the top issue the United States faces, beating out the COVID-19 pandemic, healthcare, and economic issues.
The U.S. has been suffering from 3 major issues that have been ignored by politicians there. Those issues are blamed for the deep divide within American society. They are the legacy of race, capitalism, and the media landscape. Race relations have plagued the U.S. for a long time, with many issues still unresolved in a multicultural society. Here's another report.
If not dealt with properly and swiftly, the extreme division in the U.S. could turn into a full-blown crisis with dangerous ramifications. It could lead to incidents such as the January 6th attack on Capitol. On that day, a large number of Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol, where the U.S. Congress was meeting to certify Biden's presidential election win. Over 500 people have been arrested in connection with the attack. Also, about 140 officers from both the Capitol Police and the D.C. Department were injured. Four people died in the attack, including a senior police officer. The U.S. also faces another challenge that is gaining steam: a national divorce. A Texas pro-independence group named the Texas Nationalist Movement is trying to push a referendum vote on the independence of the state, dubbed Texit. Also, support for the secession of California from the U.S., named Calexit, is rising. As of September 2020, the California pro-independence groups got approval again to collect petition signatures.
It's dangerous because what you have is one-third of the population who are increasingly convinced that the government is illegitimate. And when you have that, you also now have the mobilization of a section of these people to attack the very instruments of government.
Violence and secession are two probable outcomes of the continuation of the current trend within the U.S. political system. It's high time Washington came up with a plan to heal its fractured democracy, or watch its house of cards burn gradually.
Well, that's it from me.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
This summer's minimum ice cover was the 12th lowest ever, and scientists warn that the long-term trend towards shrinking continues. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Tassin Thompson Ryder. This article is published under the heading Arctic Sea Ice Hits 2021 Minimum. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Arctic sea ice has passed its minimum extent for this year, shrinking to 4.72 million square kilometers on September 16th. The U.S. National Snow and Ice Data Center, NSIDC, has reported. Owing to a cool and cloudy Arctic summer, this year's annual minimum was the highest since 2014. Ice covered nearly 1 million square kilometers, more than last year's extent of 3.82 million square kilometers, which was the second lowest ever observed. But it is still the 12th lowest sea ice extent in nearly 43 years of satellite recordings. And scientists say that the long-term trend is towards lower ice cover. Walt Mayer, a senior research scientist at NSIDC, who is based at the University of Colorado Boulder said, even with global warming and the overall downward trend in sea ice, there is a still natural variability. The minimum Arctic sea ice extent is declining at a rate of 13.1% per decade. Mayer said, including this year, the last 15 years have had the 15 lowest minimum Arctic extents on record. The lowest minimum extent on record was set in 2012, after a very strong storm sped up the loss of thin ice that was already on the verge of melting. Stephen Armstrong, chief scientist of Polar Bears International in Bozeman, Montana, said, the average of all the years is steadily decreasing while the average global mean temperature is increasing. He adds that although there might be the higher sea ice extents in any given year, the frequency of bad ice years with a low minimum sea ice extent is increasing. Armstrong said, better ice years are increasingly anomalous in the long-term trend. Arctic regions experienced a cooler, cloudier summer season than usual this year, which was partly caused by patterns of low atmospheric pressure in the northern hemisphere. In June and July, weak low pressure in the central Arctic prevented warmer southern winds from being drawn into the area. This kept the air cold and stopped some of the ice from melting. Low pressure also causes the formation of clouds, which block sunlight. This can further slow down melting. In August, the low-pressure system shifted to the north of Alaska's Beaufort and Chukchi Seas, producing air temperatures that were 2 to 3 degrees Celsius lower than average. And last year's winter winds had pushed older, thicker ice into both seas. Mayer says, so going into the summer, the ice there was thicker than it had been in the recent years, and that made it a bit more resilient. However, there is also likely a climate change aspect. There is less older ice overall, and the ice cover is thinner. Thinner ice is more easily pushed around by the winds and currents. A transient increase in sea ice might create better conditions for species that use the ice to hunt, says Armstrong, adding, but it's that downward trend of ice sea caused by an increasing frequency of bad ice years that determines the ultimate fate of polar bears and other sea ice-dependent wildlife.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and how about a thought-provoking aphorism from Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace be upon him, the elder grandson and second infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. One who lacks intelligence has no decorum, and one who lacks determination has no magnanimity, and one who has no modesty has no religion.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Justice in Islam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. The Quranic concept of justice also extends justice to being a personal virtue and one of the standards of moral excellence that a believer is encouraged to attain as part of his God consciousness. Allah says in chapter 5, verse 8, "Be just, for it is closest to God consciousness." See how beautiful it is, right? Without justice, without being just in our lives, we cannot get to the levels of taqwa that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala expects us. So taqwa, a prerequisite for us to be able to climb up the ladder when it comes to God consciousness or taqwa, is the very concept of justice. So an unjust person who is unjust in his personal life cannot dream to be a God conscious without fixing this vice in his life. This is what we're told through the narrations and through the verses of Quran. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala even says, "Be conscious of God and be just to your children." See how many times we assume that it's okay, it's just my child, it's just my kid, I can be unjust towards him, right? Just because he's my flesh and blood, you know, that's fine, you know, he's my own. Well, guess what? Allah is not allowing you to transgress even with your own child, right? Who you are sponsoring, who you're paying for, who you're taking care of, you still cannot be unjust towards that child. The Quran tells the believers in chapter 6, verse number 152, "When you speak, speak with justice, even if it is against someone close to you." We're not free to say whatever we feel like it. We have to be just before we open up our mouth. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing some very personal and private and individualistic level of being just. We said that it's not just, you know, when you go to a courthouse that the topic of justice becomes relevant and important. No, even in our personal lives, at a very small scale, we're us being just with our wives, wives being just with their husbands, the parents being just towards their own children, and the children being just towards their own parents. This is how deep this whole concept of justice goes in Islam. Being just towards your elderly parents. Do you think they deserve to just be in a nursing home while you are alive and you can take care of them? Well, this
may be something you have to consider if you are wanting to be just. And without justice, rest assured, you cannot get to those levels of taqwa that are destined for you. So if you want to climb up the ladder, be just. Fair dealings in measurements, for instance, and weights, is mentioned in Quran in other passages where justice is, you know, discussed in buying, selling, and by extension to business transactions in general. It is emphasized. There is an entire chapter of Quran, which is chapter 83, I believe, where fraudulent dealers are threatened with divine wrath. In conclusion, to render justice, in the words of a scholar, a noted classic Islamic jurist, ranks as the most noble of acts of devotion next to belief in Allah. It is the greatest of all the duties entrusted to the prophets, and it is the strongest justification for man's stewardship of earth. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Dublin suburb of Howth has a new highly efficient firefighting crew. The group has 25 members, but none of them are human.
Howth was targeted by a lot of fire, and so there's a lot of gorse here, and it's prone, it's very flammable. And the goats, on the other hand, love gorse, so it's a win-win in that sense. I suppose the project also focuses on the old Irish goat and defining their role as a functional biodiversity crew. They're a hard-working crew, they're up for the job, they're keen to do it. It also instills key conservation grazing principles to tackle fire prevention and habitat management and the control of invasive species. So it's the old Irish ladies that have the job to do here and are well able to do it.
The goats graze eagerly on the ample gorse bushes, which are highly inflammable and cause blazes in hot weather. The local council hopes their deployment will make Howth less susceptible to wildfires. Conservationists also hope that the project will contribute to the survival of the old Irish goats, which almost went extinct in the last century. Each member of the herd has a box around their neck with a built-in GPS device. If the goats stray too far, the gadget will ping and let the owner know.
Five Siberian tiger cubs born in a South Korean zoo have made their first public debut. The cubs were born at Everland Theme Park in Yongin in late June. Their birth brought joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts as they are listed as endangered species. Zookeepers say it's unusual for Siberian tigers to give birth to five babies at once. South Korean people selected the cubs' names through an online vote. Many exotic fruit plants need the tropical climate to grow, but Assyrian is producing nearly 100 types of tropical fruits at his backyard in a coastal city of Tartus. Muhammad Hassan's passion for agriculture is to the extent that he left his job in media to build a farm. He managed to create a tropical environment at his compound, and that was the reason behind his success in growing fruits that are rare in many parts of the world. In fact, he has turned his farm into what he likes to be described as a tropical cave.
I came across the world of tropical fruits as some of them existed here. Many immigrants also helped me on this path. They bought me special varieties from India, South America, the Caribbean and other countries, even China. Currently, we grow 93 types of fruits.
Hassan's success has encouraged other Tartus residents to create their own farms. The government is also assisting Hassan with his unique business. His farm is now open to tourists and visitors where they can taste the products. Hassan says he has bigger plans for the future and is thinking about using his tropical environment to raise and breed rainforest animals. In Brazil, paleontologists have discovered the fossilized remains of a dinosaur that lived roughly 70 million years ago.
It's a bipedal dinosaur with short arms, around 5 meters long, and it was at the top of the food chain in the period in which it lived. It was the predator at the time.
Paleontologists say the fossil suggests a dinosaur species known as Gurupi Itata was a meat eater. They found the ancient predator's remains at one of Brazil's richest sites for dinosaur findings in the city of Sao Paulo. The first piece of Gurupi Itata's fossil was unearthed during an excavation work in 2002. Until the completion of the research, a model of this species would be on display at Monte Alto's Museum of Paleontology. Experts believe the discovery would help scientists better understand paleontology on Brazilian lands. Most of us know the feeling of being moved by a work of art. A Kosovo artist tries to make us understand a form of political discourse through a mosaic of outgoing German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Alkent Pajogo has made a Merkel mosaic from seeds. The artist says he wished to thank the German leader for having been an example for all the women of the world. He says his work is also a tribute to the towering lady for the support she had given to his country, which declared its independence in 2008. Pajogo was doing his work on the same day Germans were voting in the general elections to choose a successor to Merkel. Alkan Pajogo holds 2 Guinness World Records for his giant mosaics made with seeds.
Technology plays an important role in our daily lives. This time, a French company has introduced a device to help the visually impaired to avoid obstacles. The smart electronic device detects obstacles and warns users with a beep. People with vision loss can install it on the top of their canes and receive information through headphones. The gadget helps people to dodge barriers on the ground and above that, for example, the open door of a truck.
If you hear the sound to the right, it means that the obstacle is on the right. If it is straight ahead, the obstacles are in front of you. So you change course according to what you hear. If you hear an obstacle to the left, you go to the right, and this way you can go around the obstacle.
The device costs around $2,300 and is now being used by hundreds of people in Belgium, France, Germany, Italy, and Switzerland.
Wally the Walrus has risen to fame with his extensive travels around Europe. Now the giant mammal has added Iceland to his list of trips. Wally has previously visited France, Spain and the UK. His last known location before Iceland was Ireland. Scientists were not sure at first if they had indeed seen Wally, but Seal Rescue Ireland recognized him from scars on his front flippers. The wandering walrus is 4 years old and weighs about a ton. He has covered a distance of around 5,000 kilometers in his recent trips. Wally is now on his way towards his home in the Arctic.
French Zoo has had a very productive year, welcoming multiple new animals into its collection. Two pumas, two jaguars, nine Peruvian squirrel monkeys, and even rarer, macaque twins are new additions to the Mingni Zoo this summer. The animals were bred as part of a program designed to maintain and promote the conservation of endangered species. Once they reach the breeding age, these animals will be transported to other zoos to help boost the population of their species.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Now, a museum in Russia's Kaliningrad has unveiled a special exhibition to the public. It would not be exactly wrong to call the artworks out of trash. All the works exhibited are made of rubbish. The exhibition is showcasing a wide array of objects, including sculptures, musical instruments, robots, and costumes. The project was designed with the aim of raising awareness about recycling. People visiting the exhibition were delighted by the creative use of garbage. Only 7% of waste is recycled in Russia each year, while a vast amount of trash is stored in landfills.
An Egyptian artist is making incredibly tiny statues of famous historical figures and landmarks on pencil tips. 30-year-old Ibrahim Balala is based in the city of Rashid, south of Cairo. He has mastered the art of crafting miniature sculptures. Ibrahim mostly creates statues of Egyptian pharaohs, but Islamic, Greek, and Roman figures also feature in his portfolio. The artist received some criticism when he first ventured on his art, but he persevered and rose to prominence with his minuscule statues. Ibrahim's dream is to open a museum of miniature sculptures someday.
Fourteen lucky penguins have been returned to the seas off the Atlantic coast of Argentina after rehabilitating them from malnutrition and hypothermia. The Magellanic penguins waddled back happily into the chilly waters once they were released. They were distressed, malnourished, and dehydrated when they were found by conservationists in February. There are an estimated 2 to 3 million Magellanic penguins in the world. The cute birds are named after Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan. They are mostly found around Argentina and Chile.
Another groundbreaking archaeological discovery in Peru is now catching attention. 800-year-old human remains south of the capital, Lima, highlight the ancient burial rituals in the South American country. The remains of eight adults and children buried in a common tomb were found by a group of workers laying gas pipes at the site. They were buried with food, dishes, and musical instruments, including flutes. Archaeologists say that the eight people lived in the ancient town of Chilca, some 60 kilometers from Lima. They say some of the bodies were buried with the shells on their heads and had bags with cocoa leaves inside them. They say the discovery will shed more light on the pre-Hispanic history of the region. Another 30 human remains had been discovered in Chilca in 2018.
A taxi company in Thailand has turned its vehicles into mini vegetable gardens to help its drivers who are out of work due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The point of this project is so that employees have something to do to reduce stress. To a certain extent, it has helped with reducing our stress, but it isn't really the answer to the situation right now. Even though the drivers and the staff are able to harvest the vegetables for food, it's just part of solving the problem. I think the government should also step in to help us too.
The taxi company is growing vegetables on the roofs and hoods of 300 disused taxis that are parked idly. Prolonged COVID-19 lockdowns have affected the drivers' income negatively so that they are unable to pay the lease of their vehicles. Therefore, working in these gardens has reduced their stress and provided the drivers and their families with food. Farmers working on the border between Venezuela and Colombia have discovered a tusk that is believed to belong to an American mastodon from 16,000 years ago.
We went to the place and the fossil was there, and then we realized it was something very important. We rescued it because there was a risk of it being lost, and at this moment, it's in the Archaeological and Paleontological Museum of Agualinda.
The experts say the discovery would help them with complementing information about extinct animals and ancient settlements. They say the finding of the tusk in the site would increase its potential contribution to scientific researchers. The discovery of mega faunal fossils in South America has been common over the past decades. In 2019, more than 800 mammoth bones were discovered near Mexico. A group of Cambodian students has designed a manned drone in an attempt to beat traffic. The drone has 8 propellers and a school chair for the pilot's seat. It can carry a human weighing up to 60 kilograms. The creative students say the drone is still in its early stages of development and testing. Equipped with 4 batteries, the human carrier drone can fly up to 4 meters and around 10 minutes above the ground.
Here we have big problems related to traffic jams, so we did some research about this before building the drone. We came up with this drone project as we had the idea that we wanted to solve some problems for our society by making a drone taxi, as well as investing drones for firefighters to help put out fires.
The prototype can or has cost around $20,000 to build. The designers say they need 2 more years to complete the project. The school has expressed hope that the drone could be used in everyday life.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
Mare Provincial Governor in Yemen's National Salvation Government, Major General Ali Muhammad Tayman, said the country's army troops and fighters from allied popular committees will establish full control over the entire district of the central province of Marib in case Saudi-led militants refuse calls for a ceasefire in the strategic area. We're prepared for you an article written by Karim Jaffery, an independent journalist and blogger, under the heading Yemeni Government's Initiative for Ending War in Marib. simultaneously with the appointment of the United Nations new envoy to Yemen, consultations as well as political and diplomatic pressures, and of course, the United States and the UK's entreaty for an end to the war in Yemen, sustained themselves. The Yemeni Army and Popular Committee's extensive victories over the past 2 weeks have caused the American side to finally despair of stopping Ansarullah movement through military means and seek out another approach. It was for this reason that the White House's envoy for Yemen made several trips to the region over the recent weeks. She visited Riyadh and Muscat, meeting with the country's officials. The Saudi side practically fights for the Americans and lacks all internal inclination towards the continuation of the war. However, it is trying to exit while still saving its face. For the American side, the fate of the city of Ma'arib is very important, and it is engaging in the consultations for the same reason. Over the past 7 years, the British and the Americans did not spare any crime against the Yemeni nation, crimes of such enormity that just some things slightly resemble them have happened in a country such as China or Russia. These countries would have had 7 or 8 resolutions issued against them and faced hundreds of condemnations on the part of the bogus Western human rights organizations. Nevertheless, all these pressures led nowhere, and starving the Yemeni people did not make them sell out their scruples. The West's heavy investment in Ma'arib province did not bring along any victory for them. Their direct interference in the war in the city showed that although they may be the bigger in numbers and have greater equipment at their disposal, they have nothing on the Yemeni fighters in the area of designing and enacting battleground operations. Simply put, it should be said that the Emiratis departed from the battleground about 2 years ago and admitted defeat. The Saudis are awaiting the smallest sign on the part of London and Washington, and the latter two themselves are facing a deadlock too. The Sana'a forces are leading a winning strategy which features a gradual approach towards the city. Their scenario comprises laying a siege on the city, either directly or taking it under a barrage of fire. Doing this, they would be leaving the coalition's forces just one outreach pathway through Hadramaut province. The Ma'arib battle signifies greatly, since defeat in it equals the defeat of Mohammed bin Salman's adventurism in Yemen. Moreover, the war has impacted greatly on Saudi Arabia too, because it has caused it to come under successive rocket and drone attacks by Yemen's Ansarullah movement. The war casts a long shadow on Saudi Arabia. However, after the U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman's trip to Muscat, and on a demand made by the Omani side, Yemen's National Salvation Government submitted its initiative for ending the war in Ma'arib province to the Omani diplomatic mission. The initiative is actually the most dangerous one that the Yemenis have put on the table. And if the Saudis and the Americans do not accept it, Ma'arib will be besieged from the direction of the Shabwa province. Here are the provisions of the initiative. One. Formation of a common directorate comprised of Ma'arib locals towards the protection of security and stability, and expulsion of Al-Qaeda and Daesh terrorists from Yemen. 2. Provision of guarantees of freedom of movement, freedom of all the abductees, compensation for those who suffered during the coalition's aggression, return of those who have been displaced and migrated from the province, and an end to aggression on Ma'arib's residents. 3. Allocation of the revenues that are made from exports of oil derivatives from the Hodeidah port to the provision of payment for Ma'arib's people. 4. renewal of the operations of the province's gas power plant, guaranteed commitment to the provision of the other province's share of oil and gas, and formulation of a joint committee tasked with repairing the safer operated Ras Isa oil pipeline. Previously too, Muhammad Abdel Salam, head of Sana'a's negotiating team and Ansarullah movement spokesman, had told the Al Mayadeen television network, he said, "We came to an agreement with the Omani delegation over the resolution of the humanitarian case. We see no inclination on the part of the enemy coalition's constituent countries towards peace, and it is just the Omani side which has initiated the negotiation process here. Our initiative awaits the approval of the other side. The initiative features agreement on freedom of all those who are captive in Ma'arif province and compensation for those who have suffered. We also agreed on Ma'arif's governance by its own people through an all-inclusive governing body." Abdul Malik al-Ojari, one of Ansarullah movement's leading figures, has also said previously that the Ansarullah had assumed that Ma'arif battle would not be easy. "We have not set a timetable for the conflict. The goal is to liberate the city. We take steps towards liberating it, as well as other occupied cities and provinces, from the filth of the occupiers." The Yemeni army and Yemeni popular committees have adopted a military strategy that suits the region's geographical terrain. Moreover, another senior Yemeni official says the country's armies and troops of fighters from allied popular committees will establish full control over the entire district of the central province of Ma'arif in case Saudi-led militants refuse calls for a ceasefire in the strategic area. Ma'arif provincial governor in Yemen's National Salvation Government, Major General Ali Muhammad Tayman, told Lebanon's Arabic language Al Mayadeen television network that the Yemeni army troops and allies are now in control of 85% of the Ma'arif province and are only about 6 to 7 kilometers away from the provincial capital of the same name. General Ali Muhammad Tayman added, "The Yemeni armed forces are currently positioned on the outskirts of Ma'arif city," stressing that, "We agreed to the initiative by the leader of Yemen's popular Ansarullah resistance movement, Abdul Malik Badruddin al-Houthi, for a ceasefire. However, Saudi militants loyal to Yemen's fugitive former president, Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi, kept bombing women and children. We want peace and strongly oppose bloodshed." He added, "Houthi's initiative is fair as it involves the locals of Ma'arif in its administration and appropriation of its resources. Such an initiative had not been developed for the past 40 years. We presented the truce initiative from a position of strength." Major General Ali Muhammad Tayman highlighted that he was ready to sit